ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Lieutenant Ricky Reba balances Navy life and an acting career. Sue Zizza and Robin Miles join us before the Here Now Festival starts, and Robert Heinlein's crowning achievement, Time Enough for Love, in our audiobook feature right after the news you want to know.
I'm Charlie Stanton. Okay, everybody, welcome to Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. We have an exciting show for you this time around. You know, we have a special guest, and he is straight back, you know, from a convention that he just went to. And, you know, without further ado, I'll let him introduce himself and tell you a little bit about the, his name is Baron, and let him introduce you to the convention he went to.
Well, thanks, Charlie. It's Baron Lewis here. I just got back from the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, and it was fantastic. The real great story there was virtual reality with Oculus Rift and Sony, both at the expo showing us their latest technology. The lines were around the block all the way through the expo. And the big story was at the exit of GDC, Oculus Rift was purchased by Facebook for $2 billion. This shows that their acquisitions are continuing. With less than a month ago, they acquired WhatsApp, Instagram, and now with Oculus Rift, they're moving into virtual reality.
And they tried to buy Snapchat, I remember, I think, and Snapchat turned them down, which I found very surprising. It's hard to walk away from, you know, $3 billion offer, but apparently some people can.
Right, and they did. They walked away. The big question is, what are they doing with virtual reality? And most people don't realize that Facebook is really morphing into a conglomerate. And you're going to start seeing products that are going to be released out there that may even not have the Facebook logo on them as they begin to expand into these segments.
So like a Comcast, Time Warner type situation, right, where they're just buying up other companies to become like NBC Universal, I think. They own, or GE, I guess it would be. They own NBC, they own all these other little companies, and they don't slap GE on everything. The companies are big enough to be their own thing.
Right, and with the acquisition of WhatsApp as well, they've been able to expand their user base. With Instagram, they're being able to bring in their technology. Oculus Rift, with their virtual reality, really is something that people can't quite get their handle on, but they realize that Facebook is pathfinding its way into the future.
Well, you know, the thing that, you know, that I was going to say, and I was talking to Maya about that, you know, is like, to me, it sounds a lot like Disney.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Disney is known, you know, for making movies, and, you know, that's their forte. But people, you know, really don't realize, you know, how much they actually own.
ABC, Marvel Studios, Marvel Comics.
ESPN.
ESPN, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what Facebook is morphing to.
And that's how the Golden Boys do it. Apple, Google, Microsoft, Pfizer, Transam, Gulf work. They all work this way.
Diversification.
The tech giants look to mince and mash their way through acquisitions into the corporate mothership.
And they were trying to buy that drone manufacturer, too, weren't they?
That's
like
right.
Titan
that's right.
something, I think it was.
That's right.
They bought it.
They bought it. Oh, so they did successfully buy it,
They want the internet to be omnipresent, and they're going to bring drone planes to the United States, which will allow us to have wireless internet access anywhere in the country.
That would be amazing. Yeah, there really is a movement now to reclassify the internet as not a privilege but as a necessity to modern life. I mean, can you imagine, you know, how hard it would be to navigate the modern world without the internet anymore? It really has become like owning a car was. You know, at the turn of the century, a car was a luxury item. You know, and by the 40s or the 50s, a car was a necessity. You could not function unless you lived in a very dense urban center. And I think the internet is quickly becoming that same thing. It's not just about, you know, pictures.
Yeah, actually, I saw a documentary, and it was about a movement that's happening in Peru. And there are villages that are off the grid right now, and the kids never even have seen a computer or the internet, and they are actually getting the chance to get connected to the internet, and it's making a real difference.
You know, because I saw a thing with Mark Zuckerberg, the owner and founder of Facebook, right? And they were asking, what his goal was, and he said his goal was to connect the world.
Yeah,
It's amazing when you think about it, and Facebook is only 10 years. It just turned 10 years old this week, and in 10 years, time, the company has gone, from being like, play Farmville and say hi to grandma.
Yeah. To a world-class corporation.
Yeah. Right. Where countries have actually started wars, over this. And I think what they're buying, and this is just my opinion, and maybe Varun can give us a little more insight into this, is that, Oculus is, for those of you who don't know what it is a virtual, glasses that you wear.
Virtual reality glasses. Yeah.
Right.
It's a headset that you put on and you actually are immersed in virtual
reality. Right. And the idea behind it, which is nothing that's really fascinating, and I think you really, you'll find this fascinating too, is that, an Oculus started as a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah. I knew some people that contributed to that.
There's an example of how far those can go. Who knows when you look at Kickstarter right now what ones are eventually going to be big wigs.
Yeah.
And the thing with Facebook, going with an Oculus, which is a surprise, it really was, because it was out of left field.
It was out of left field.
Because they're not a gaming company and they're not looking in, to get into, the gaming business.
Well, and Oculus wasn't for sale either. Right. It wasn't like they were out looking for a buyer. Facebook just came in and goes, hey, here's a bundle of money. Can we buy you? And they're like, yeah, okay, sure.
Well, Zuckerberg agrees with you. Zuckerberg, talking to analysts, said, this is the real new social platform. We're making a long-term bet that immersive reality and augmented reality will become part of people's daily lives. At one point, that Oculus has the potential to be the most social platform ever.
And this is just a layman's point of view. And maybe some of you guys here will agree with me. Maybe some of you won't, But when I, found out about it and read that they had bought it, right, I'm thinking, my first thought was, you're going in the wrong direction. The gaming industry is already,
That was my thought, too.
Is already taken over. Why are you trying to get into the gaming industry? Why don't you just start making phones or, this and that, right?
Right.
But they're not doing that, So the more I looked into it, the more I researched it, right? My opinion is this, is that, they bought it because of the technology, right? Oh. And I think what they want to do with the technology, because Zuckerberger himself said that, he goes, we're not looking to make money on this thing right away, and we're not looking to start making games or anything like that. He goes, we might do a game or two, just for fun to see how it works, test it out. He goes, but, we're looking long term. And when we say long term, we're looking, 5-10 years down the road. I think what they're really looking for is, to own the technology, which they now own.
Yep.
That is so interesting. Right? That's a really good point. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Now they own the technology, right? And I think what they're going to ultimately do with it, especially when them just buying drone, is they're going to use it as a tool that they can sell to the military.
Yeah, that'll be a huge one. Because if you can use the drones to map out an area and then give your people the ability to see it in real-time virtual, I think of like the Osama bin Laden raid. If you have a 3D layout of that, you can practice over and over again with it right in front of your eyes in an immersive virtual reality setting. So it totally makes sense.
And you're right on with the military thing. There were other companies there with virtual reality goggles. It was a three-dimensional camera. And the demo they had was from Camp Lejeune.
right.
where you were in an immersive environment on a training exercise with actual U.S. Marines.
You called
so
it.
So you're right there.
Charlie called it.
Well, you know, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but you know, that was when I started thinking about it, I go, no, they want the technology. They want to own the technology, and now they do.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so that when they start doing, flight simulator.
Yeah, 3000.
Or they start doing, war games and stuff like that, They do it all in 3D, and they do it all, through the Oculus goggles.
Yeah.
Where, where nobody gets hurt, everybody gets trained, and, mm-hmm. and it's something that they can sell to the military.
And if you think about it, you could, sell it to internationally, yep.
right.
to other military.
Well, what's
some of the other applications that Zuckerberg pointed out was the ability to sit courtside at a game and watch games.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to have classrooms anywhere where you want to be able to go, and even be able to meet a doctor face-to-face through this virtual reality. So you're right on about the military uses, but it's also going to be a broad adaption to the general population as well.
But right, which Maya kind of gets us back to the thing I was saying about him, when they asked him what his ultimate goal is. I mean, the guy's 30. He just turned 30.
That's amazing.
And, blows me away.
Yeah, no, he just turned 30, and Facebook just turned, 10, right? Mm-hmm. And, what does he want to do with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, there's, so many different avenues and so many different, things that he could pursue, right? And he said, I want to say, true to the course. And he goes, and my goal was to connect the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so interesting you say that, because I actually saw a really great documentary at the Ashland Independent Film Festival. And it was about the story of Aaron Swartz. And he was someone who...
He was 14 when he co-founded Reddit, so that right. ties perfectly in with what he's.
But you're talking about this long view that these technologists have, like Zuckerberg talking about the drones, the satellites, and the lasers to deliver internet to everyone.
Yeah.
And using a service called internet.org, which is a global partnership between technological leaders, nonprofits, local communities, and experts who are working together to bring the internet to 2/3 of the world's population that doesn't have it yet.
that's a great, great, I missed out, on something that you said that was very, very important. And I think it's not only important, to the world, but, important to, to all of us in this room and stuff like that. It's like when he says he wants to connect, the world and stuff like that, so now he's bringing in technology to where, if you're in Uganda or you're, in, Somalia or something like that, now you can send children to school. Right?
Yep.
And keep them connected. And the more people are educated, the better it is for everyone.
For everyone, exactly.
Right.
All right, so what else was at the show? So virtual reality was the big thing.
The big story was diversity. We're seeing more and more people coming to the table. There was a luncheon there at the show. Over 420 of the top women executives in the industry were there. And the keynote speakers were talking about bringing diversity and how this will raise the standard for our industry by including more people in the games, not only in the management and development, but in the actual reflected in the games themselves, that this will help to mature the industry and to bring it to a larger audience.
I love that they're including the women in that, because, there is probably some amazing Mark Zuckerberg out there who's right. a woman, and I really, it's exciting to hear that they're doing what they can to reach out and try to cultivate
that. And you'd like to meet her. And her name is Marissa Tomei, and she is the CEO of Yahoo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they are doing, practically, not practically, but they are trying to go in the same direction. As a matter of fact, there's, a big story, since we're doing a little tech stuff here. Marissa Tremaine, is the first, big CEO, right, female of a huge company, and Yahoo is a huge company, right, who's been successful. There's been a lot of females that,
Hewlett-Packard tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know, if it was just, bad timing or whatever, but she seems to have her finger, right on the pulse of things. And one of the things, that they did, with Yahoo is that Yahoo, at her suggestion, so hats off to you, ladies, she bought 47% of Alibaba.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
Which is the biggest search engine in China. And now China is going to take Alibaba public.
Yep.
Wow. And they are not going to take it public in China, and they're not taking it public in Hong Kong. They're taking it public in the United States.
They're joining the NASDAQ.
That's interesting.
Isn't it? Yeah. So, well, what
I'm curious to see what's going to happen with that.
I mean, well, what a savvy move for her.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yahoo could be making so much money next week. They just bought Tumblr. I'll talk about this later, but they bought Tumblr for $1.1 billion just recently. Yeah, Yahoo is looking to make a lot of money very soon. Because you and I, Charlie and I, we talk this kind of stuff all the time, and we were talking about Alibaba a couple weeks ago. I remember you were mentioning about this upcoming IPO, and everything I was reading in the last couple, it's going to be so much money.
It's not even the money, man. The thing that blew my mind was this. It's the biggest search engine in China, right?
Right.
The thing that just blew my mind is that Marissa had, so much moxie.
Yep, and foresight.
Right.
That she got the IPO away from China and away from Hong Kong.
That's amazing.
And brought to the United States.
That's really smart.
Yep.
You know?
Well, and that's the aggression you've seen with the women in gaming. Women in gaming have had an organization that's been growing for years. They have a gathering every year at Game Developers Conference. Blacks in Gaming have their own gathering. And for years they've been pushing that the glass ceiling in the gaming industry. And this year it's shattered. Now you're seeing them playing a major role. And I'm sure you're going to see Latinos, Asians, you're going to see games. We're going to get better games, more interesting games, because as an industry, we need to mature, just like the movie industry did when it came through its evolution.
True.
The game industry needs to mature because a rising tide truly will raise all boats in this industry.
Yeah, the only problem I have with that as a hardcore, I consider myself a hardcore gamer, I play a lot. The only issue that I have with that is we need to be doing a better job as a society with gamers in general, because everything that I see, every time I see a post from a female gamer, and I like to say a female gamer because there's this thing about girl gamers or gamer girls or whatever, the way they – online gaming is a massive chunk of the industry. It's the lion's share of the industry now with most of the world being connected is online gaming. And the way they get treated online is reprehensible. Right. Mm. And so I really when you talked about that diversity thing, I have a strong feeling that when it comes to technology, if you build it, they will come. If you build a good product, it really is merit-based in that industry, because if you build a good game, you build a better search engine, you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door.
Well, I think, Jerry, what you're seeing right now is, back in my day, and back in your day, Varun, I am woman, here we are, and stuff like that, and all this stuff, right? That's not what it is anymore. Now it's everybody's playing on a level playing field.
It's equality of everyone having the same role and not having gender.
And I will go out, on a limb even further and say, when Hillary Clinton is elected president in 2016, you will see things not change so dramatically. But you will just see the
leveling
out. Yeah, the leveling out, Mm-hmm.
Right.
It won't be an issue anymore,
It's a natural evolution. It's a thing like these are gamers. These women are gamers, and they want to make fantastic games. But they, they realize, too, that to make fantastic games, you've got to reflect the true nature of the society. And so as we do this, we're going to get better games, more engaging games, games that other people, more diverse people can relate to. So I see this, and what really happened here was that the leaders in the industry are beginning to acknowledge through their keynote speeches, through their conferences, the value of this. They aren't just knocking on the door anymore. The door is opening wide.
I'll take a step further, man. I think what you're really seeing, man, is that, we all finally, are waking up to the fact that, there really is no difference between men and women, besides, our physical attributes.
Genetic.
Some of the smartest people in the world have always been women.
It would be great to fast forward 20 years and see what's going on. Yeah.
Let's pause for a second.
No, let's not say 20 years. Let's say actually 5 years.
All right.
The next tech story that I really want to cover is Microsoft and Sony, the consoles. Sony is just selling the Microsoft Xbox One 2-1. And although Microsoft does have a better slate of games, they are suffering. Sony, the PlayStation, the new PlayStation coming out is outselling the Microsoft Xbox.
Yeah, I think PS4 just passed 8.5 million or 8 million, and I think Xbox just hit 5 million.
Now the strange story here is this may not affect Microsoft because it's not in its core business. The person that's going to, the company that's going to be affected will be Electronic Arts, because they are releasing Titanfall exclusively on the Xbox
One. Yeah, it came out a couple weeks ago.
If the Xbox One fails, so will their game. So they're riding this tiger right now. And we're looking at the fact that, you know, essentially we want to see that PlayStation somehow is really moving out ahead. I think it may be because of the price point. They're $100 less than the Xbox
One. It's a big part of it. Titanfall has been a massive success. Microsoft really hitched their pony to that wagon because now they're selling a Xbox One bundle that comes with Titanfall. And one of the guys I work with, he plays Titanfall, and I've seen it, and it is phenomenal. But one game does not make a console. Right. You know.
Well, you know, let's close with this, okay? The gaming is a big industry, and it's big for kids and stuff like that, you know, and it's big for adults and everything. But I think what you're going to find within the next 5 years, as Maya said, you know, is that all this stuff is going to be passe. You know, I mean, you know, Atari was a big, you know, thing. You know, all these things only have a short period of life. The things that's amazing to me, which I think that Zuckerberg is realized, or maybe he's just, you know, has the smartest wife in town because she's a pretty smart cookie. No, she really is. She's very, very, you know, very, very smart woman. They're going like, you know, I'm not looking to the past, man. I'm looking to the future. Yeah. And you know, and that's where we're going for. Because, you know, even though you mentioned Microsoft, you know, they have a phone. It failed miserably. Their software, you know, I don't know anybody who doesn't, bash on it, you know. But they are still one of the richest companies in the world. Yeah. I think the company you're going to see fall through all of this is Apple. Because they no longer have a genius running the company.
Yep.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And there's a lot of sharks at the door, you know, with this whole thing with the price-fixing scandal, the lawsuits, patent-related. Yeah, I think Apple is in for a very rocky road going forward.
I'll tell you a quick story. My daughters, you know, I have Kindle Fires for them, you know, the Kindle Fires HDX, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest problems with it is that, you know, it allows kids to do in-app purchasing. So they go to the zoo and it says, you know, buy a bag of food for your animal, right?
Right.
And the kids, you know, they're playing and they hit it, right? And every time they do that, that's like $100 hit on my credit card, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds a little precarious there.
Right. And, you know, so I've talked to Amazon, which I will say, you know, is very cool about it. If you tell them about it, they will take it and reverse it.
Right.
Right? And there are parental controls, but I'm saying, like, come on, man. Most kids,
you know. Most kids know more about the machine than their parents do. Yeah,
yeah, exactly, right? But anyway, here's the interesting thing, right? I said, you know, one of these days, someone's going to catch on, you know, and it's not going to be a cool thing anymore. Anyway, Apple, you know, within the last month, paid out, what was it, almost something like $11 billion.
Refunded in-app purchases?
Refunded in-app purchases because they got sued by so many parents, so irate.
Because they said the games were deceptive on purpose.
Yes.
You know, they're basically to trick kids into buying stuff.
Whoa. What the court actually said was it was online gambling.
Really?
That they allowed to children.
Wow.
What was, I don't get it. So like,
basically like the games with the whole in-app purchasing system. The way these are, do you mobile game at all? The way they're designed
is, I do.
So like, you know, like, say, like Simpsons Tapped Out, where if you want to build a house, it takes 4 hours real time. Or you can buy these things to speed it up.
Candy Crush.
Like Candy Crush. Candy Crush.
And it always comes
example
up. Okay, you can get for 99 cents.
Like Power Ups.
Exactly. Like Power Ups. Right. And it is. It's like online gambling for kids, essentially.
It's
like,
really,
if you want to enjoy this, you got to spend mommy and daddy's money.
Right. You know, and like, you know, my kids would get messages, you know, because they have these you know, farms and zoos and stuff like that.
Roller coasters. Yeah.
Yeah, no, no. And they would get messages, you know, from the app manufacturer saying, you know, if you don't feed your animals, they're going to die.
Oh, that's terrible.
Right. You know, and so, you know, so they, you know, of course, you know. They,
well, I don't want my animals to die.
Right. You know, and so they were doing this. And now the industry now, you know, as it gets bigger, you know, is starting to police itself saying, you know, no, that's not cool.
It's not cool.
you can't do that, you know.
They probably have hired like undercover psychologists to find out what are the best ways to make kids feel guilty so they'll spend the most money.
Well, you know, I mean, my suggestion to them, you know, and I still make it, you know, strongly is that, you know, if you want to do in-app purchasing, you know, then that's fine. Then you need to, you know, disclose that up front and say, right. You know what? You know, you can play the game for so long, right? But if you want to go faster or higher or farther. Candy Crush or whatever, right? We're going to charge you an extra $15 a month to do that. You know, we're not going to, you know, and that way everybody knows up front, okay, you know.
And I'll tell you, as a gamer, as a hardcore gamer, a lot of people decry the system. I like it because it allows me to test out a game before I put down money. In the old days, I'd go to Toys R Us or KB, and I spent $60 only to get home and find out the game was a pile of crap.
And that's so, a really good point.
Consoles
are having such a hard time.
And the consoles are kind of going to this too. You know, they have demos through PlayStation Store and Xbox. So I'm cool with the structure. I agree, though, that they should not have been so targeted to kids and done in such a way that, you know, people didn't know better, didn't know what's going on. All right, so before we take off, final thoughts on the GDC. What was it great? Was it awesome?
It was fantastic and awesome, and I want to leave things on a really positive note.
Okay.
I want to let people know out there that one of the things that came out that I found when I was down there is that Google is expanding its super fast fiber optic network to 34 cities, including Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
So we're going to be getting the gold ticket here, folks. We're going to start seeing high-speed fiber optic network.
It's only a matter of time until it comes down that I-5 corridor to us.
That's the best news I heard.
Best news I've heard all month, Varun. Well, thanks for joining us, Varun. That's awesome. I'm so jealous that you got to go to the conference, but I'm glad at least that one of our people was able to go and bring us back some awesome swag. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Varun.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I do know what time it is. It's time to get the answers, everyone. And when I need to know, I go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. So listen up. Higher education is coming our way. Now I love it. And, God bless America.
Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro, he knows. Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro, he knows.
I'm Jerry Renfro, and I'm the man in the know. If you own a smartphone or any device capable of texting, you are probably very familiar with the layout of a keyboard. Over the years, the proliferation of texting has led to an almost new language, often referred to as text-speak or text language. As in the era of the telegram, where long-distance communication was expensive and you paid by the word, the time involved in texting has led to many, many shortcuts, and a variety of phrases are being reduced to sometimes as many as a few letters. Technically, these could be considered abbreviations. Remember, it's only an acronym if the letters spell another word. And if you are not under the age of 20 or new to the world of texting, I have gathered for you here some of the more popular abbreviations you are likely to come across when little Billy sends you a message instead of calling. A lot of these are obvious if you take a moment to look. LOL means laughing out loud. Other variations include ROFLOL, which means rolling on the floor laughing out loud, and ROTFLMAO, which is rolling on the floor laughing my blank off. IDK, I don't know. OMW, on my way. JK, just kidding. IMHO, in my humble opinion. OMG, oh my gosh, or something else. TMI, too much information. And WTF, what the fudge. But I didn't say fudge, I said the other word, the mother of all swear words. You can fill in the blanks. For you gamers and social media mavens out there, here's a few that will really suit you. BRB, IRL, and AFK. BRB means be right back. IRL means in real life, and AFK means away from keyboard. So if you have to get up to go meet somebody that you met online when they're at your front door and you'll be back soon, you just say, BRB, gonna be AFK, gotta go meet someone IRL. Some text shortcuts are a little trickier. CYA means see you or see ya. BCNU, be seeing you. And LAR, later. When my buddy texted me and said, yo, got tics for the BDSM conference, wanna go? My response was LOL, OMG, TMI, WTF, CYA, LAR, which of course meant I'm laughing out loud. Oh my God, too much information. What the fudge? See you later. I'm Jerry Renfro, and now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Lieutenant Ricky Reba tells us how he turned the lights off at the Super Bowl in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we are really honored to have on Lieutenant Ricky Reba from Southern California. He is a voiceover artist and an inspiring actor. It also happens to be serving in the United States Navy. Ricky, welcome so much.
Hi, Edward. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. For all of our listening audience out there, you know, tell us a little bit about what you're doing recently, besides being on Ellen's show. That was hysterical.
So I typically what I do my day is I go to the Navy in the beginning of the day, early as possible, and I serve my country. I do my job with the Navy at a naval base about an hour away, and then I run off to Hollywood and audition. I perform, I network, I hustle every single day. So I'm trying to do something every single day to enhance my acting career.
Okay, and what naval base are you at?
I'm at Naval Base Point Magoo, which is sort of western Malibu area. It's not too bad.
Well, just for our listening audience who may or may not have seen it, I suggest that you go, well, you can go on to Ricky's website, which is rickyreba.com, and his last name is spelled R-Y-B-A. And there is an hysterical video there. You were on the Ellen DeGeneres show, and one of your amazing things, you did a flip with one of your hidden talents. And, you know, I watched it, and I was like, well, one, it was great, and two, I think you you might have even, been converting Ellen right there on the spot when you took your shirt off.
Yeah, just for a little bit, yeah.
I noticed at the end of the clip, she goes, you know, you don't have to put your shirt back on if you don't want to.
Yeah, she was flirting with me a little. I appreciated it, and it was flattering. I actually submitted that video to her of me doing my sideways belly roll, like a talent video submission, 10 or 11 months ago, and I heard nothing back from her, just crickets, nothing, and I just assumed that it was lost in the endless submissions to the show. And then one day, out of the blue, I was on set, and I got this amazing phone call from the people of the Ellen DeGeneres show, and they said, we were hysterically laughing. We saw your clip and we loved it. Can you still do this? And I said, yeah. And they said, oh, great. We're going to have you on the show. And a week later, I was on the Ellen show. It was pretty fantastic.
Well, yeah. Well, I encourage everybody to look on your website or just go to YouTube and they can find it there. Now, you know, also I watched another video that you've done. For our listening audience around the world, the Super Bowl is really huge here in America. And I think it's pretty big, you know, around the world as well. But you did a video about, you know, why the lights really went out in last year's Super Bowl with the Ravens and the 49ers. And it was hysterical. Can you tell us a little bit about it, how you came, you know, you came to do that, and what inspired you?
Yeah, I was actually at the Super Bowl party with my friends, and I got a phone call maybe 7 minutes after the lights went out, real time. And my buddy said, you know, can you meet me at this location with this type of outfit to shoot a parody video of why the lights went out? And I said, absolutely. So I dropped everything and I left the party early And, you know, because acting calls, I got to do it. This is my passion. So I show up and he says, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're going to dance around and have your own little party downstairs in the basement of this arena because you're the janitor and you're missing the Super Bowl. So you're going to have your own little fun listening to some Beyonce and just dancing goofy. And you're going to swing your broom around and you're going to accidentally trip the breaker and the light switch and turn off the lights for the entire stadium. And that's going to be the reason why the lights went out at the Super Bowl. And I thought it was genius. I fell in love with it, and I was doing the worst dance moves that you could possibly think of. The goofiest. It was so fun. Oh my gosh.
Well, I'll tell you what, for everybody out there, you've got to watch it. It's hysterical. It's done. It's very well done. And, you know, I don't think your dance moves are off at all. I mean, I wish I could dance like that, you know?
You know what? I danced for about 2.5 hours, and then only, you know, maybe 2 minutes worth of dancing actually made it onto the clip. I really did my cardio for that night. I was exhausted by the end of the night.
I'll bet. Now, you're originally from New Jersey, right?
Yes.
One of our co-hosts is from Maplewood, New Jersey.
Okay, yeah. I grew up in southern New Jersey in Medford, and it's a really nice town. Wonderful people, good area, good schools, very competitive in sports.
So what made you decide to go into acting? Because from what I can, you know, gather, this is a passion that you're, you know, yes, you're serving your country. You know, I think that you're kind of like making the move towards this is what I want to pursue. I want to pursue an acting career.
Yeah, absolutely. So I played sports my whole life. I played football, track, baseball, wrestling, and I was all about sports my whole life, and I was really good at it. And my junior year of high school, I decided not to play baseball anymore because it wasn't enjoyable and fun like it used to be. And so I had all this spare time, and some cute girls came over to me and said, you know, hey, I heard you're not playing baseball. You should try out for the musical. We need some guys for the musical, some tough guys. And
okay.
They knew I could sing because I did chorus my freshman year. It was either chorus or art, and I can't draw. So, but I can actually sing. I can hold a note, right? So I auditioned for the musical, and I got the lead role. And I fell in love with musicals. We did Footloose that year, and I was Kevin Bacon's character.
And we already know you had the dance moves down, right?
Yes, right? Yeah. I can sort of dance, too. So I fell in love with that whole different side of me and learning about my creativity and my performing side of myself. And I was already applying to the Naval Academy, and I spoke with my mom and I said, listen, you know, if I don't get into the Naval Academy, I really want to pursue this acting stuff. And lo and behold, I got into the Naval Academy, which is very, very difficult. And then I met this guy named Rob Mays, who I played football with at the Naval Academy, and he quit the Naval Academy after our freshman year to pursue acting. And fast forward to, I was on my second deployment overseas, and I'm in Greece at a naval base, and I come across this movie section that I was going to try and rent some movies, buy some movies to catch up on stuff I'd missed, and I see my buddy on the cover of a DVD, and I saw him essentially making it in the industry, and it proved to me that normal guys that were on a similar path as me can deviate and, you know, actually make it in Hollywood. And so as soon as I got back from my deployment, I took some acting classes and I fell in love with it again. And I really did well. And I haven't looked back since. And I know that this is my dream. This is my passion.
Now, you were in a few musicals, and, you know, we've seen some of your videos, and we know that you're a really good dancer and you can carry a tune, and you're a good actor. But what is it that you like to do? I mean, is it like, because I noticed that you do voiceover too. I mean, do you like voiceover work? Are you more of a, you know, in front of the camera guy?
I'm a definitely in front of the camera guy. I love to perform. I also have many different talents, like you've seen the sideways belly roll, and I can dance and sing. Another tool in my belt is that I can do different, you know, character voices and accents and impressions. And I've always done that just goofing around, but it's another way to get myself out there and book gigs and network and characters in cartoons or just funny, goofy voiceover work. It's so easy, but it's fun. It's just another way to entertain and perform. But ultimately, acting is my focus.
And what would you like to be in? Would you like to be in movies, television, theater?
I respect theater so much. It is so difficult to be in theater because you have to be amazing every single time you perform live. But I think, you know, my dream and my desire is to be in the biggest films that I can possibly be in or have a really amazing role in a great TV show.
Well, you know what? I have a neighbor that lives close to me, and we are here in Ashland, Oregon, in the Pacific Northwest. I'm sure you've been here in this area before. And we have a theater. We're called a theater town. We have a huge Shakespeare festival that's been going on for over 25 years, and it's just a big thing. And a lot of the actors come up here from Los Angeles and, you know, perform in these plays. And it's just amazing to see them do it, you know, day in and day out. And recently, this one guy that lives next to me, Tasso Feldman, he was in a number of plays this past season. And then he is in New York now doing a TV show for ABC, a crime drama that is just a brand new show.
That's fantastic, yeah.
So maybe that's a career path for you.
You know, I definitely thought about it, but, you know, with my time restriction, with also still being active duty in the Navy, I need to hustle and I need to progress my career so fast and do so much to build my career before I get out of the Navy, which is in June, July timeframe.
You're almost out.
Yeah, I know. I'm finishing my my commitment with the military in June and July, and then I'm out for good, and then I'm pursuing acting full-time, 100%. But what I was saying about the theater is that, you know, you've got to prepare for several weeks and months to perform one show. You know, I want to get myself out there in multiple ways, in every single way possible, hustle, network, and just be all over the internet, all over film and television, be all over social media. And, you know, I want them to find me in that capacity. But there is also an alternate route of, you know, doing theater and proving that you're a really talented, real good actor as well.
You certainly have the talent. So, you know, I wish you all the luck with that. And we want to see you in more movies and things like that. You know, other than you know, some of your videos, your dancing, stuff like that, I think it's great.
So I've got a few commercials that are coming out. One in particular that I'm proud of is a national commercial for K Jewelers, and it's going to come out on NBC, and it's going to be a 60-second spot. So that's going to be a really good exposure. I really like doing commercials because they're short and fast, and it's good networking opportunities, and it's getting myself out there, and it's good exposure. And also, it opens up doors for future projects, and I'm very passionate about it. It's not even a job for me. I would do it for free because I enjoy it that much.
Well, you know what, Ricky? It's been so great having you on. This is Ricky Reba. And look for him on his website. That's Ricky Reba, RYBA.com. And, of course, yeah, he will be on JustImagineInc.com, and where he'll be a featured artist. And it's been so great having you on. And you know what? We love to have you come back on, and especially if the lights go out in the Super Bowl again.
Thank you so much, Edward. It was really great to speak with you and have me on the show. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
To learn more about Lieutenant Ricky Reba, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Samjhine chahu kunai din malai pani kasai ko pani saath na hunda.
After the audiobook Oscar Gala in New York, known as the Audio Awards, Sue and Robin are ready for a holiday in Kansas City at the Hear Now Festival. They talk about this celebration of the spoken word with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to an exciting edition of Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. We are talking with Sue Zizza and Robin Miles, and you are telling us about the new festival, which is the second year for the Hear Now, right?
Yeah, it is. It was exciting last year. It had all of the bumps and bulges of a brand new festival, but even with even with a couple of logistical transportation issues, everybody had a really good time, and the performances were fantastic.
So last year at the festival, we had somewhere around 30 artists representing approximately 90 hours of content. This year, we had more than 200 hours of content submitted by just about 50 artists. So we're very excited about the fact that there are more artists producing more content, and this year we have more of a variety and more of a selection of work. So we do have some mystery, but then we've also got great tales to be told. So the listening sessions this year that are going to be happening at the Cinemark Theater in the Country Club Plaza section of Kansas City will offer a variety of really interesting and varied audio stories.
Our company is also sponsoring you guys this year, too, Downpour. So
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. We're very excited that this year Downpour is one of our sponsors, and you're helping to make it so that after all these great live shows and recorded listening sessions, every night the festival has an after party that begins at 10 p.m., and those will be over at the Holiday Inn and a variety of venues around the Holiday Inn. And then this year we even have some midnight listening for people who really want to stay up late, and those are for people that have all-access festival passes and want to hear stuff that's very unique but not necessarily family-friendly, if you know what I mean.
A little adult.
A little adult, that's right. So we're giving people the opportunity to come to Kansas City to meet some of the premier narrators in the audiobook world, Simon Vance, Scott Brick, Barbara Rosenblatt, Robin Miles, to meet some wonderful, wonderful working narrators, Robin Rayeller, Mark Turetsky, Sue Billich, Donna Postal, all the people that will be doing the Mark Twain, Joyce Ferring, Ryan McCabe, Ellen Stewart. And then additionally, you'll have the opportunity to meet artists who have created the work and also to come to other live shows like Audio Cabaret with Scott Brick, or on Saturday night, we have a wonderful show called Right Between the Ears.
I love that title, Right Between the Ears.
Well, they're a group that's been in Kansas City for more than 25 years now, and we have a wonderful relationship with them. And so they end the festival for us on Saturday night. And this year, the special guest artist at Right Between the Ears will be Barbara Rosenblatt and Simon Vance. So they'll be coming in from the festival to participate with this very, very unique Kansas City sketch comedy group.
One of the fun parts for me is doing a Golden Voices read. Sue has found a really nice location. I pass by it, and everyone sort of passes by it and says, ooh, ah, from the architecture. And she said it's just as ooh, ah, once you get inside. We're going to be reading Scott Brick and Barbara Rosenblatt and Simon Vance and myself. We will all be reading, and we haven't quite picked the theme just yet, and I wouldn't want to give it away as a spoiler, but I will tell you that we'll each read likely two selections, and that'll be on Saturday at 1 o'clock. I'm really looking forward to that.
In addition to the Golden Voice Narrator event, we also have an event this year that is at the World War One Museum in Kansas City that happens Saturday afternoon after the narrators, and this is going to be voices and stories from the front. And it features a variety of individual stories as well as songs, poems, and other kinds of storytelling, sonic storytelling moments that really bring forward some of the things that happened at the beginning of the Great War to people in their personal lives and to the families that were part of this experience. And so the National Audio Theater Festivals and the Here Now Festival have joined together with the National World War One Museum in Kansas City to host a number of programs at the festival over the next few years as World War One is being remembered.
You know, it just sounds like, you know, I want to hop on a plane and go out and get out there and just join in these festivities.
Oh, you're not going to be able to go?
You know, we just got back from the Audi, so, you know...
Oh, yeah, you can make but so many trips, I understand.
Totally. Yeah.
that was an exciting audience for me because it was the first time I'd been asked to present. And
I enjoy doing that kind of thing. I actually have an improv comedy background. I was in Theater Sports New York for several years. And but I don't think people think of me as comedic or, you know, humorous as an actress. But that's how I made, you know, my performing in New York was composed of that for a long while. And it's so nice to get back to that.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you like that?
Yeah, I loved it. And winning an Audie for the first time was fantastic.
Oh, my gosh.
I feel so honored. So honored.
Yeah, it's quite an event. Everybody enjoys themselves, and the work is just outstanding. And it's like one of those games you see in sports where both teams play so well, and you're like, it's a shame that somebody has to lose because, you know, they both deserve to win. And that's how, you know, the audience is. There's so many good pieces of work there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and you won. And so congratulations to that.
Yeah, that was really, it was just so exciting for me.
So, as I said, we have live events, we have recorded events. Some things are free, some things require a very nominal ticket price. But, you know, we got to pay the bills, keep the lights on, and all the rest of that. So I'd like to give the address again, www.hearnowfestival.org. The dates are June 19th to the 22nd in Kansas City, Missouri. And if you have any questions, you can send us an email to hearnowfestival, and it's spelled just like our website, hearnowfestival@gmail.com. And we spell here, H-E-A-R, here now.
So Kansas City.
That's what's coming up, and we're all quite excited for the Here Now Festival. It looks to me like it's actually grown quite a bit in its 1 year. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you guys are going to have so much fun at this festival, you know, and I wish you all the success in the world.
Thank you. I'm so sorry you can't join us. I'd buy you a drink if you were there.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Do us a favor. After the festival and stuff like that and everything settles down, why don't you come on back on and tell us all about it, how it went.
All right. That sounds great.
All right, Robin. It's been great talking with you, and have yourself a lovely evening. Okay?
Thanks.
All right, Sue. It's been great talking to you. You got quite a lineup going.
Great.
And I wish you just a wonderful afternoon.
To learn more about Sue Zizza and Robin Miles, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Time Enough for Love is the capstone and crowning achievement of Heinlein's famous Future History series. Lazarus Long is so in love with life that he simply refuses to die. Born in the early 1900s, he lives through multiple centuries, his love for time ultimately causing him to become his own ancestor. Time Enough for Love is his lovingly detailed account of his journey through a vast and magnificent timescape of centuries and worlds. Using the voice of Lazarus, Heinlein expounds his own philosophies, including his radical ideas on sexual freedom. His use of slang, technical jargon, sharp wit, and clever understatement lend this story a texture and authority that seems the very tone of things to come.
Counterpoint 1. The chair gently transferred Lazarus to his bed while the technicians silently supervised. Then the shorter watched the readouts on respiration, heart action, brain rhythms, and other physicals, while the taller placed the documents, old will and new, in an impervelope, sealed it, chopped and thumbprinted the seal, marked it, surrender only to the senior and or Mr. Chairman pro tem, then retained it until their reliefs arrived. The relief chief technician listened to the record of the watch, glanced over the physicals, studied the sleeping client. Timed, he stated.
Neolithi, 34 hours.
He whistled. Another crisis?
Less severe than the last. Pseudopain with irrational irascibility. Physicals within limits for this stage.
What's in the sealer?
Just sign for it and include delivery instructions in your receipt.
Pardon me for using up oxygen.
Your receipt, please.
The relief wrote out a receipt, chopped and thumbed it, swapped it for the impervelope. "I relieve you," he said brusquely.
"Thank you."
The shorter technician was waiting at the door. The Master Chief technician paused to say,
"You needn't have waited. It sometimes takes me 3 times this long to turn over the watch. You are free to leave as soon as the relief junior watch officer arrives."
"Yes, Master Chief Technician, but this is a very special client, and I thought you might need me with Mr. Snoopy Nose."
"I can cope with him. Yes, a very special client indeed. And it speaks well for you that the skills board assigned you to me when your predecessor opted out."
"Thank you. Don't thank me, Associate Technician." The voice, although distorted by helmet and relay and filter, sounded gentle, even though the words were not.
"That was not a compliment, but a statement of fact. If you had not done well on your first watch, there would be no second watch. As you say, a very special client. You did well. Aside from nervousness, a client can feel, even though he can't see your face. But you'll get over that."
I hope so. I was very nervous. I would rather have an assistant keyed up tight than one who knows it all and is sloppy. But you should be home now and resting. Come along, I'll drop you off. Where do you robe? The intermediate lounge? I go past it. Oh, don't bother about me."
A big novel, an entertaining one, and an important one for science fiction, says the Baltimore Sun. Robert Anson Heinlein was born in Missouri. He served 5 years in the U.S. Navy and then attended graduate classes in mathematics and physics at UCLA. After a variety of jobs, he began to write science fiction in 1939. He is a 4-time winner of the Hugo Award and a recipient of 3 Retro Hugos, and in 1975 he was named the first recipient of the Grand Master Award for Lifetime Achievement. Several of his books were New York Times bestsellers, and his worldwide bestsellers have been translated into 22 languages. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Take the time to make some sense of what you want to say, and cast your words away upon the waves, and sail them home with acquiesce on a ship of hope today. And as they land upon the shore, tell them not to fear no more.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call us at 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now, stay there.